Welcome to the EFIS Baseball Cards Podcast. I am your host, Bobby Baseball. And this week, we actually do have our boy back, TJ. Welcome back, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. See, I thought it's our last week off, but I don't know. It sounded like I made a guest appearance at some point in time. picked up on that. And I don't know, man. Y'all, I felt the love throughout the whole episode. So it was good. It was good. Appreciate you guys. It's good to be back. Let me tell you, it's good to be back.
How's the dad life treating you?
Oh, man, it's good. So, you know, you tease it a little bit. We had our newest addition to the PC, if you will. My baby girl, Mia, was born. So I have another daughter. Her name's Tiana. She's 18 and she lives with her mom in Phoenix. So, you know, I like to keep it interesting. You know what I'm saying? So I got my new baby girl, Mia. She's here. She's a proud Cardinals fan. We've been, you know, doing lullabies, talking about the 2006 and 2011 Cardinals and Yachty's, you know, consecutive run of gold gloves and all that other kind of stuff. So she'll be in the know. She'll be ready to go.
It's funny. I started educating my daughter early too. So she was born May 2020. So like peak COVID pandemic. I got like a 6 week leave from work. And like, I found myself on the couch with this child and I'm like, what am I even supposed to do right now? Like it came in a time in the world where I was just like literally cooped up at home anyway. So literally we watched, there was no sports. It was before baseball came back and we just watched so much like ESPN classic type stuff. Like I remember like we watched like the Lakers and Kings game 7, like the Derek Fisher shot. Yeah. We watched the bloody sock game with Curt Schilling. We watched like the game 7 of the Yankees and D-backs with the little bloop single off Mo Rivera. So we got the education in early for my daughter. So nice. I'm hoping pays off.
I'm going to have to pull out these. I bought, you know, when the Cardinals won the World Series, you know, they used to, it was like DVD box sets.
Oh, yeah.
Where each game had its own. So I'm going to have to pull out the Roy Halladay, Chris Carpenter, game 5, NLCS, and just let her just watch a good old-fashioned pitching duel. She's going to scream halfway through it, but it's okay because I also screamed a lot during that game. So it's going to be all right.
Good stuff. Well, from me and from Philly and from the whole community, congrats, man. We're so happy for you. Glad everything went well. Mom and baby are doing well. You're awake and you seem to be thriving. We're both kicking Starbucks cold brews right now. So
no doubt.
I have a feeling this one's going to be a banger.
Yeah, it should be good. It's good to be back. You know, Bobby, you know, like when you announced on the Discord, I was coming back for this episode. I put the Stone Cold GIF, you know, where he's powering down the ramp on the ATV. I'm ready to rock, bro. Somebody break some glass.
Oh, my God. So what have you been doing in the hobby recently, I guess? Can I ask you that?
Yeah, so it's been interesting. So I've been doing a ton of grading, bro, you know, through these bulk subs and stuff like that. And, you know, as a part of that, I've been sending a lot of my big Yachty PC stuff in, just, you know, as a matter of preference, as a matter of preservation, as a matter of enhancing the value, as a matter of, you know, potentially ease of sale for those who may have to sell those. You know, just got done talking about both of them. You know what I mean? Somewhere down the line, hopefully, you know, 30, 40, 50 years from now, something like that. But sending all my SPs, SSPs, some big autos, some early rookie stuff. And sitting here right now waiting on FedEx. They got 92 slabs that are supposed to deliver in 2 separate shipments. Maybe like 40, 45 of those are mine. The rest of them belong to some of these degenerates in the Discord. Ripped a little S1. Stopped by. I saw my man Mike at Card Kings. Grabbed a hobby box. It was exactly how you expected it to go. I couldn't tell you a single card I pulled out of there. I think I pulled a Cubs auto. I think Philly mentioned it.
Nico Horner.
There you go. It was a Nico Horner auto. Sold for like 15 bucks or something like that. Who cares? But then I grabbed a hanger box at Barnes & Noble, pulled that Bryce Harper Golden Mirror SSP, and celebrated the moment for a couple minutes, posted some pictures, you know, your requisite Reddit post and Instagram posts, and then, you know, over to the guys in the Discord, put it up on eBay. I think I owned that card for like an hour and 45 minutes. sold it for $400. Looked at the comps. There was a sale at four, so a sale at 450. I threw it up at 450 OBO. Guy offered 380. I shot back four. He bit. And all I did was put in the comments, I will ship this today if you pay today. And he did, and I did, and it was good. Looked the other day, and it's selling for like 275, 300 right now. So I think I made the right choice.
Yeah, for sure. If it's not a, I mean, if you're ripping in the first week and you're not planning to keep it, I mean, might as well just ship it out. Unless it's like a clear PSA 10 and you're like, you want to go through the whole grading gambit, which I'm sure we'll talk more about that. This is going to be a grading episode. We got no agenda here other than, you know, let TJ give his thoughts on S1, and then we're going to talk about the big news, the PSA acquisition of SGC, and just, you know, really some of our thoughts on that and grading as a whole. So
I don't know, absolutely.
What else do you think about Series 1? You didn't, we talked about it before it dropped. So for me, my, you know, the high level summary was I wasn't super stoked on it. Then I saw the cards and I thought, you know, the quality is pretty good. There are some nice touches to these. It's a little better than I expected. Hobby boxes, odds look kind of shit. Retail, really not bad. Seems to be where the value's at. I don't know. What do you think now that you, has your opinion changed at all now that you've had some stuff in your hands and ripped some boxes?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have, let's see, I did the hobby. I've done two blasters and three hangers. The hangers, I've had phenomenal luck. So I opened up a hanger box last night on my weekly Walmart trip that we talked about, like on a previous episode, and I pulled up Michael Kopech, SSP, another golden mirror out of another hanger.
Boom.
So it's a $25 card at the end of the day, but you know, I got two hangers, it covers the cost. And I don't know, man. I'm kind of digging these gold backs on these SSPs. I kind of like that. I like it better than the gold SSP in the top right hand corner. What I don't like is that we've had these cards for like 2 years and we've already had like three iterations of them. Mm-hmm. That's kind of weak. I don't like that. So I have my 2023 Yachty and it's, you know, it's dope, but it's just got the, you know, SSP in the back right hand corner. By the way, I got a PSA 10 for the record. So all my Yachty SPs from 2020 to 2023, all tens. So I dig the little foil. So I was hating on the neon, right? It's a 10. I was hating on the neon in the, on the team names. And, I kind of dig it, bro. It's got a little foil in it. It kind of refracts. I was hating on the black edges and I kind of dig those too. I'm not seeing a lot of QC issues in printing or anything like that. These cards are not coming out of the box. It's jacked up. I mean, look at this. This is Ryan O'Hearn purple foil parallel. It's just a nice looking card, bro. The purple really, it fills it up. I like it. It's got the full color border. Far and away, way better than 23, 22, or 21. Just with the plain white borders. There was just a stretch there where everything just kind of looked the same but different. So, yeah, upon further review, I'd probably give it a 4 out of 5 on the design. I don't hate it. I do hate the Easter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've come around a little bit.
Wow. All right. Well, I think you were kind of digressing into something
now. I hate these Easter parallels, bro. Can we knock it the hell off with this holiday crap? You made a Christmas set, and it's moderately successful. Let's be honest, bro. Is anybody really pumped for holiday? I mean, it's cool. The guy's wearing a Santa hat while he's hitting it. Nice. But I don't need an Easter set. I don't need a Halloween set. I don't need all. Oh my God, man. So can we chill with the Easter egg, Easter bunny parallels? For that alone, I don't want to buy blaster boxes.
All right. I got
they you. Are better than manufacturer relics, though. Much better than manufacturer relics. I will say that.
You know, I found one of the, it's Home Sweet Home. That's the manufactured relic this year, right? Is that, or is that just an insert?
I think it's an insert, bro, because they're not, it's not a one per blaster box. Oh, if you open a blaster box now, your guaranteed hits are those Easter parallels. They're no longer like a big coin with a picture of Joey Votto's face on it, you know, which I hated those. So, I mean, I guess that's an improvement, but I don't love them, bro. It's kind of corny. It's kind of gimmicky. Not my thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. While I'm on it, I do like the Home Sweet Homes. Those are pretty cool. I like one of them. The Kutch popped up. You guys like know I love Andrew McCutchen and CMPNC Park, where I spent so many summer days. I mean, that's a cool card. But yeah, I'm with you. It's not for me. Maybe the kids like it. I know some of the guys in the Discord have talked to, like, oh yeah, I'll give that to my kids. So, but yeah, not really for me, man. I don't know.
Well, overall, S1's pretty cool. I'm good on it. I'll rep it a hanger over here and there, maybe a blaster, whatever. But I got what I needed out of that with that Harper pull. I'm not chasing Ellie. I'm not chasing Dominguez. I have my thoughts on both of those guys. I don't think either one of those is a long-term amazing hold. You know what I mean? I think we've already seen Ellie's holes, and I think Dominguez has already been too hyped that his pricing is just so baked in that you can't do anything well there.
All right, so now that you bashed Ellie, and now that the last episode I talked about how many of those home field advantages there are, you see what I pulled out of a mega box?
Oh yeah, yeah, that was lovely, and I hope you did the appropriate thing with it, my man. I don't know if it's a PC hold or I hope you let it go. Did you let it go?
No. For those of you guys who don't know, so I finally got through my busy stretch at work. You know, all the accountants out there rejoice. We filed our 10K. We did a big capital raise. We had another transaction. It was just like so much stuff going on all at once at work. And it all quieted down the same day. Had 2 days off, dropped my daughter off at school, and then found myself at Target. Saw some retail products, saw some mega boxes, made a new friend over there who I referred to this podcast. So if you're listening, bro, I don't know. I think you saw what I pulled on Instagram. So Ellie De La Cruz home field advantage. So did that rip live, the personal rip on the Discord. So that was really cool. Pull.
That's a solid hit.
I was shocked. I wasn't expecting anything. I was just kind of like, I was pretty much in my head done with series one because I'm just focusing on singles. But it was kind of special occasion. I had 2 days off work. I had so much time. I had no idea what to do with myself. So what I did was I opened that at like 9 a.m. on Thursday morning. And then the rest of the weekend, I played the shit out of Elden Ring, which I've been talking about nonstop in the Discord. So any Elden Ring people out there, keep motivating me. I die a lot, you know, but I'm progressing. I beat Margit. Those of you who play know what that means. So we're moving. But yeah, TJ, I kept it. It's PC for me, so.
Hey, it's if you're going to hit a home field advantage, it's probably one of the more preferable ones to hit. It's nice to have something big. So I let go of a few slabs this past week. I sold like a Jackson Holiday auto. I sold, you know, some other stuff where it's like I could probably hold it a few more months and maybe squeeze another 25-30% out of it. Or I can maybe, you know, hold it forever or just let it go now. But, you know, I'm looking at a couple of these and I got like my junior Caminero first Bowman auto. I'm like, I can let this go right now for $500, but I kind of just want to keep it. You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of the thing with the Ellie. It's like, it's a big card. It's a fun card. It's a beautiful card. Maybe I just want to hang on to this and just kind of see what happens in 20 years type of situation.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be that good, but I mean, it's a cool card. It's a cool memory. It's again, going to remind me, I'll go right back to the time and place that I was at in my life when I hit the card. So when I hit a big one, doesn't happen very often, especially now that I'm ripping less. So I'm trying to keep it, but, and the other ulterior motive is I showed you guys and I showed some guys in the Discord. So I've talked about like my big card display that I have. So I used to have like a, long story short, some wooden slots on a wall where I could hang slabs or whatever. And basically what it turned into was like 65 or 70 slabs. So ripped that off the wall, got three new cases. Two of them are for ungraded cards and one are for graded. So now I'm like, one is all Padres ungraded cards. One is my slabs. And then the third one is just ungraded raw, just sick cards from all teams. You know,
tell me a little bit about those little cases that you bought though to display those cards in, because they're not quite one touches. They're a little bit different.
Oh yeah, yeah. So well, the middle one is really straightforward. So the company's called Penzoni. It seems like this collectible shop. up in Michigan. They sell all kinds of stuff. They sell card cases. They sell like gun display cases, like the works, just like anything that people would want to collect and display. And so the thing I got is called like 50 graded card display. They called it like PSA, but really any slabs fit. It's super cool. Mm-hmm. It's like this black wooden frame with like a UV protected case with a lock and everything, which is cool.
That's the key, is that UV.
Yes. That was really important to me. So that I have like kind of in the center of the wall, it holds like 50 graded cards. So before I'd been displaying like 70. So now my position is, if I'm not displaying it, I'm probably going to sell it or put it up for sale. Cause I'm like, these are for me to look at. But the other ones that are on the side, I kind of have like two, they're called like 50 ungraded card cases, and the slots are pretty small. So that was a self-protective measure, because I know myself, I would end up with graded cards in all the cases and spend a shit ton of money. They don't fit one touches, but I got these Ultra Pro mini snap cases. So it's pretty cool. Basically, they're just slightly larger than the card. They only fit your regular like paper and chrome size, so nothing thicker. But they just like snap in, and you can hardly tell that there's a case around it. They're super clear, so you get all the refraction that you want. And they protect the card. So
are they UV too? I thought I saw that those are UV protected as well.
I think that they are. So you kind of got double UV protection on those. And then for the graded cards, the BGS slabs have double UV. Those have UV protection.
Yeah,
SGC
yeah.
and PSA do not. So maybe that's something that we come back to when we talk about graded. So I was like, hey, that Ellie, like I look over the graded case, fully filled out, like got everything I want. The case to the right of it is Padres, got tons of Padres SSPs, golds, autos, etc. So the one that's like kind of lacking and that I'm going to focus on building out is the one that's like really like my best cards of all teams. And I've got some sick stuff in there, but then I've also got some super like stuff that's not going to be in there for more than like a few months, because it's going to get upgraded. So that case is like kind of where I'm focusing. So you're going to see me buying all kinds of stuff. So I'm also trying to think, like, if it doesn't fit into one of these displays and I'm not going to hang it on my wall and look at it every day, I'm not going to buy it. So that's my new plan.
I strive to have your discipline, sir. I strive. I got everything. I mean, I don't know, man. It's a lot going on over here.
I just did like a new, so the other thing that happens is my wife did this. She's amazing. My closet that's like right next to my desk was like overflowing with shit. Cause it's one of those closets that sits right above a stairwell. So it like doesn't have an even floor. It's like got like the slant of the stairwell. And like, basically it was my dumping ground for all my shit. But she actually went and got like wood at Home Depot, cut up the wood with a power saw, and like basically put shelving in there. So I like now.
Shout out to Wifey F Baseball. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. She's the man of the house. She's pretty, pretty impressive when it comes to like home improvements. Like she gets joy from it. So
I have to start running nicknames for her.
Yeah. Like she was talking about like the other day, like a few weeks ago, she's like, I haven't done any like home improvement projects lately. Like I really, really want to like do something. And I'm like, yo, look at this closet right here. And like 3 days later, it was done. It's crazy. Like she crushed it.
Hats off to you, sir. Literally.
Dang. Yeah. She's amazing. So that's what I've been doing. So in terms of like big purchases, I mean, really, I got that mega box. I got the LE out of it. I'm trying to think what else. I can't remember. Oh, I got the Juan Soto Golden Mirror SSP.
Yeah, that was the one I was thinking about.
That was a big one. That was a big one. That's a sick card.
I picked up a few Yachties the last 10 days. So I've been real focused. So I got that 2004 Fleer Ultra Gold Medallion Yachty. It's a die cut.
Yeah, you love die cuts.
Yeah, well, so it's three sharp corners and one of them is rounded. If it wasn't Yachty, I wouldn't do it. But Yachty prices are, they're really, really stabilized. We're talking like 2019, 2020 levels, like pre-COVID type stuff.
Okay.
I found a 2023 Topps Japan out of five is the red, but it's number four out of five.
Is that his jersey number?
It certainly is, my man. Nice. It certainly is. I picked that up on the cheap. I found a 2005 Donruss rookie for Yachty. His rookies for Donruss are all in 05 out of 200. It's another red parallel. And then I found a 2005 playoff prestige rookie out of 100. It's a red parallel. So a bunch of red rookie Yachty's.
It's a nice color match.
And every single one of them going to PSA. I don't even care if they're sevens and eights because threes. The pops on them are so threes. Low. It's crazy. Well, they're not modern, so I'm sure they won't get threes.
Yeah.
I've seen some jacked up 2004 stuff that came back at eight that looked way cleaner than that PSA 3 ever looked, but we'll touch on that in a second.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I did buy two other cards from Series 1, both of them stuff that I talked about last episode, so kind of executed on the plan. I got that Ha-Seong Kim Golden Mirror SSP, and I also got the Ha-Seong Kim team logo parallel or whatever you want to call it with the Padres logos all across the border.
Those are cool.
Yeah, like I initially thought they were cheesy. And some of them certainly are. Like both Tatis and like Joe Musgrove, their base image is in the City Connect jersey. So it's just it doesn't even work. No, it doesn't work. It needs to be a color match. So it doesn't look good. So I'm not like building a set or anything like that. But
and you can't color match the Padres City Connect jersey unless you just grabbed a bunch of neon spray paint and threw it on the ground.
Yeah. it's tough. So I don't love that they're giving out base cards like that. I think like that City Connects would be cool for like SSPs, like the Golden Mirrors. But so the thing I wanted to say about the Ha-Seong Kim team color match or team color parallel or team logo parallel, damn it. It's got like a cool, I can't really explain it, but it's got more foil on it, it seems, than even like the Golden Mirrors and the other base images. It's hard to really explain, like some of the lettering and the logos and the player name. It's so maybe guys, if you have one of those, that's the only one I've seen in person. So if you've got one, take a look.
I hit one in a Discord break last night, so I should have one in my hands here pretty soon. I'll let you know what I think.
There you go. It had a little extra pop to it and a little extra. It's just nice. So I liked it. I'm a fan of S1. I'm just about done. I've got a couple cards left that I'm looking to get, but just about done with Series 1.
It's a refreshing, you know, change of pace. You know, the base card design the last several years has been pretty dull. You know what I mean? And I know we hated on last year, and rightfully so. You know what I'm saying? But that plain white border where there's just different levels of like the banners running across, it just got kind of old. Yeah. And they recycled it. So I'll co-sign it. I don't mind it. I'd like to see how it looks in chrome. I like to see how the chrome looks. I think it'll look mean with some of those parallels.
Oh, it's going to look unreal. It's going to look unreal. All right. Should we, let's see. Do we have any S1 questions? I'm trying to look.
That's a good question.
Because I know we got some questions. All I can see when I scroll through is just like Alex like wrecking Yachty cards. That's what our whole Discord has become. I love it.
You know what's funny is I didn't even notice it, but my cat, he has this, you know, I got a couple of them, but he likes to come in the office in the card room and steal penny sleeves or the little like plastic strip that comes off of the team bags or, you know what I mean? And stuff like that and play with it. I saw him messing around with something. He has a 2023 Topps Chrome Aledmys Diaz card from the Astros, and he's just like, I should record this shit and send it to Alex.
There you go. Oh, my God. Alex, we love you. I'm just in there. I talk about it, but I'm like just trying to incite mayhem. I'm like, I love to see it, especially like I get like a beer or two in me or something else that gets me a little buzz, and I'm like, hey, I want to see chaos, and I just start posting memes of Heath Ledger's version of the Joker. And
bro, so I got quick side. So I got a nice guy on Reddit. Shout out to Tanker Dab on Reddit. Sent me a David Eckstein autograph baseball, like as just kind of like a baby get shower type gift, nice guy type of gift, just a real awesome type of thing. So I get this box that I'm clearly not expecting, right? And I don't recognize the name or the address, and I'm opening it. And I'm just like, yo, should I just make my wife open this? Or like,
what's in the box?
I'm like slowly and precisely cutting it open. But like, I got eye protection on. I'm just making sure that I don't know what's going on, man. So we've reached, it's reached a new level.
You didn't know if that was Alex mailing you just who knows what.
Alex got a ransom note sent to him with the letters all cut out, like out of a magazine. It's wild, bro. It's getting out of hand.
We're having fun. Oh, my God. All right. So there's only one S1 question. TJ, this question is for you. What card from Series 1 did Bobby Baseball just overpay for because he had to have it?
I'm guessing it was that Juan Soto Golden Mirror. If not, it was probably that Kim Golden Mirror.
You'll find out soon. If you hit it, I was gonna answer, but it's
so clearly I'm wrong.
It's not one that I've already posted. I'll give you one more guess.
Man, so it's from S1. So is it the Manny Machado Golden Mirror then?
Nope. All right. I don't think Manny has one. I don't think Manny has a card in S1. So we will we'll hit this next episode. Stay tuned on the Discord. It's gonna be
many damn free agent signs on the Padres. You can't even guess which one has a huge card.
So yeah, right. We haven't
$1 million payroll.
We haven't signed jack shit. Like the Padres' big free agent signings, Jerks and Profar for 1 year, $1 million. I think they just signed like.
You guys do this like every 10 years. I don't remember the last time, but I remember they went out and saw like Eric Hosmer and like six other guys, and it was supposed to be the run of the year. And then 2 years later, they sold it all off. Yeah, it's cyclical, bro. Well, the team has an identity.
They did sell it all off, and despite Eric Hosmer being retired, he still brings a $14 million luxury cap hit this year and next. Oof.
How long has he been out of the league, man? Like,
I think he was in the league last year, so... You know,
but was he really in the league, Bobby? I mean,
it's bad. But yeah, he's
strays.
Hey, I think they signed Brad Miller to a minor league deal as well. I keep waiting for them to sign an outfielder, but it looks like they're going to start Jackson Merrill in center field. So should be interesting.
I don't hate that,
dude.
I don't hate that.
He's got so much swag. I don't know if he's good. So, full disclosure, I don't know if he's actually good and ready. He might
just dig his personality.
I love his personality. Like, if he is even remotely good, like, I'm talking if he has a 700 OPS, like, he brings a lot in charisma. So, and if he's actually good, he's the type of guy we're going to be seeing on, like, MLB Network, and people are going to be wanting his cards because they're going to see, like, the personality. It's big. Well, it's a big personality.
And let's be honest, I think at the end of the day, you know, we like players all over the field and, you know, certain, you know, pitchers don't get as much love. I think catchers maybe don't get as much love. By and large, first baseman is a kind of a position where it's hard to be glorious. But if you are a slick fielding, good hitting shortstop or center fielder, there's no shortage of love available to you. I mean, we love a Derek Jeter, a Ken Griffey Jr. You know what I'm saying? If you're a hard-hitting, good fielding center fielder, the sky's the limit, bro. Sky's the limit. So, yeah, I mean, if you got a little bit of swag out there, he plays a position well, hit 25 homers, steal a couple bags, make a couple sick catches, you know, flashy bat toss or two. Yeah, this is who we're talking about next year.
And I don't think that's what he can do right now, but I do think that is like the couple years from now what he can do. And it's just really, I mean, pretty impressive. Like a shortstop come up as a shortstop. He played a little bit at corner outfield last year, I think. I don't think he played much center. And now he's basically starting every spring training game in center field with the number one squad. So
that's because you guys are locked up at shortstop with three different guys until 2039.
So that's going to be interesting because think about like what the Padres have done with like some of their – I shouldn't – deep dive into this, but it's just crazy. Like Ha-Sung Kim is now the shortstop. Bogarts has moved to second. I mean, Manny came up as a shortstop. He hasn't been a shortstop for a long time, but he's at third. Cronenworth could even play some short. He's the first baseman. You've got a shortstop in right field in Tatis. You got a shortstop in center field in Jackson Merrill. It's like,
yeah, so many damn infielders, you're moving them to the outfield.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Playing no doubles defense, you'll be all right.
I mean, I know these guys have all played... It's supposed to be like, you know, the 12-year-old tournament team when you get on the all-star team, that everybody that plays shortstop for their in-house season then has to move to the outfield. But, like, you don't usually see that at the MLB level. So, I don't know.
Usually when I'm looking at, like, low-level prospects and guys that are just getting signed and things like that, you see a guy that's a shortstop. It's like 60% of the guys are shortstops. Yeah. You just put your best guy at shortstop. Right. You guys are just that everywhere. They just keep signing shortstops. Yeah. I'd fucking put him at first.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like, Xander had a good mindset to it, but like Ha-Sung Kim, he has a mutual option for next year that's pretty cheap. Like, he's going to opt out. Like, are they going to re-sign him? I don't know. Like, I don't know what they're really going to do. So we'll see. But probably enough Padres. I think next episode will be the MLB season preview. We'll let you put the little jinx on some players again, like you did.
Hide your rosters. Hide your rosters. I'm coming with predictions. We got O'Neill Cruz.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to hear you say anything good about any players that I like. That's all I'm going to say. Oh, man. All right, hop over to grading. Man,
let's do it.
I'm just gonna, like, Bruce Buffer style, I'm gonna tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we are here for the announcement of SGC being acquired for PSA, coming to you from Tucson, Arizona, at 6'5", 245 pounds of solid muscle, TJ the Yachty Guy. Wait, does he say let's get ready to rumble first? Let's get ready to rumble! Alright, TJ, what's your take, man? Not that I made an ass out of myself.
You know, sometimes there's nothing wrong with being number two. And sometimes there's no shame in continuing to fight and losing rather than just conceding and rolling over. I've heard a lot of takes about this whole, you know, situation and you know, one of the main podcasts I listen to is sponsored by SGC, so I don't expect to get a reasonable, rational take out of them on it. It sucks, bro. This sucks. SGC has been the one viable alternative to PSA. I say that as a person who sent 200 cars to PSA in the last 6 months. I love PSA for one reason, maybe two. One, resale value. Two, the little red border around the edge of the label matches a lot of my St. Louis Cardinals cards. Other than that, I think we should have options and alternatives that present liquidity, value, different types of, you know what I mean? Little aspects that we look for in grading. Nobody's grading just to grade. You're grading because you want to preserve it. You want it to look better. You want to increase the value. You want to know the condition, or you want to maximize all of those things for resale or display, whatever the case may be. And yeah, you could say that the two companies are going to remain two separate entities. That's fine. You know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. Maybe you know a little bit more about mergers and acquisitions than I do. Bobby, you seem to be more in that, you know, side of the business world. And, you know, to my knowledge, for the time being, they're going to remain two separate entities. Now, PSA didn't buy SGC. Collectors that owns PSA bought SGC. And Collector's going to do whatever the hell they want because they own them. I'm sure there's some contractual obligations and things like that where they have to remain separate entities for the time being. But I think a lot of it probably has to do with distribution, manpower, and just logistics of business as opposed to customer service or grading quality or all the things that we're concerned with as collectors or resellers or card shop owners or bulk sub, you know, runners or whatever the hell you are in this space. This sucks, man. I mean, you see, you know, kind of a lot of this just going on in the world in general, you know, not to get off on a whatever, but like, you know, there's three major grocery stores in, you know, in Tucson where we live. And, you know, come to find out they're all owned by the same damn company operating on three different banners. So how am I supposed to price compare, you know, fries to Safeway when Kroger owns both of them? You know, what are you going to do? They're going to obviously price them out, you know, however they want. So it's like perceived competition when in reality, it's all just going to the same place. SGC does a lot of things well that PSA doesn't do well, namely customer service, turnaround time, and a consistency of grading price. I can send SGC an email right now and I'll get a reply before the end of the day. And it's Saturday, bro, when we're recording this. I can send PSA an email. They'll tell me to go F myself. I requested to have 6 Yachty cars added to the set registry 6 weeks ago. I haven't got a goddamn word from those guys. They don't do anything in terms of customer service. So it sucks, man. SGC, you know, can't compete with PSA because they are PSA. And so now it's BGS or TAG or PSA / SGC is kind of how it looks. I don't like monopolies, and it just, sooner or later, we're going to do all of this whole entire hobby through one avenue, and that sucks.
Yeah.
What you think, Bobby?
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. I mean, you can say that they're going to operate independently, and that will probably, to some extent, remain the case for some period of time. But like you said, it's like perceived competition. Ultimately, the owner is the same. So what do you think the owner is going to say if SGC and PSA start trying to undercut each other to take market share from each other? They're going to say, yo, hold up. I get it, but that ain't good for me. Don't do that. Like, really, that's what's going to happen. So while they're different, like, I still think SGC has a big place in the hobby. Like, I prefer SGC for vintage. I just think vintage cards look better in that slab. I think cards with all white borders look better in that slab.
Agree.
Yeah, but for like you said, for resale, like, PSA is king, and it's not close. I have like a Frankenstein collection, which means I'll buy any slab for the most part. I just am looking for the best card. Grade is a consideration, slab is a consideration, but I'm looking for the best card. But there are a lot of people that, you know, us collectors, we are like OCD, we're type A personalities. We want everything the way we want it. So if you have a PSA collection, for the most part, you're buying PSA cards. And I mean, for that reason, I think they just have such a huge lead that it ain't changing unless like SGC were to commit to it for a long period of time and like gain all the younger collectors. So like all the 20 and 30 somethings were just solely submitting to SGC, but like that ain't happening. So I don't know.
I think they were on the right path there though, man. They've been doing these modern grading specials, these Bowman specials for the last couple of years. You're getting a lot of modern cards in SGC slabs. And, you know, I think the narrative, there's enough people that hate PSA or disagree with PSA where, you know, SGC was the only alternative where you could go send some cards to Beckett, man. They want like $30 a card. It's ridiculous. So, I think they could have done it. And yeah, maybe they weren't going to gain that, you know, 70% market share that PSA owns, but they could take a considerable chunk. And, you know, do you really just need to cash out your shareholders, or do you want to just continue to run a good, operational, customer friendly business?
Yeah. And we don't know at least I don't know what SGC's financials look like. So maybe they kind of took their run. It seems to me they took their run at PSA. Like, PSA had this huge backlog during the pandemic. SGC did not. You could submit cards to SGC, get them back right away. And SGC still wasn't really able to put a big dent in PSA's market share.
Fair.
Like, maybe they're staffed up. Like, maybe they've like built this big infrastructure so that they can turn stuff quick. And maybe they were up, you never know. Like, maybe they were operating at a loss to try to gain market share and, you know, like then slowly turn it over time. It didn't work. And they just threw their hands in the air and said, yep, can't beat them, join them kind of thing. So
fair enough.
I don't know. That's kind of what I suspect happened, but who knows? Or maybe like, cause I can't imagine that. Yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine that Collectors Universe, the company that owns PSA, just really felt that they had to go buy SGC because they saw them as a threat. Like,
nah, that's not it.
I think for whatever reason, they caught wind that maybe SGC was available or listening, which, you know, who knows? Maybe I don't know who their owner is. Maybe he's 80 years old and he's ready to cash out and give his family some money. Who knows? I don't know. There could be lots of different reasons that a company goes up for sale, but they saw the price. They saw, hey, I can do well with this. Like, I like the multiple that I'm buying this at. I'm going to be cash flow positive in X amount of time. Here's my, you know, all the finance bro stuff. So it was a good investment for them, I guess, because they're freaking making money hand over fist at PSA. So I don't know.
Yeah, no joke.
Yeah.
No joke.
But I don't know. Like, it feels bad. It feels bad because I'm with you. Like, look what happens when Fanatics takes control of everything. You got freaking grown men running around in like pants that are more see-through than the sexiest Lululemon yoga pants. I don't know. It's ridiculous.
I almost wrecked my car when Philly called for the SSP with pictures of guys' junk on it. I was howling. Yeah, man, monopolies never end well for the consumer.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems to be the natural progression of the economy, you know, just the way that everything is going. But baseball cards was kind of like that last little frontier, right? Up until 3 or 4 years ago, it was really niche, kind of whatever. And it was just, you know, us and Tops. And we just, you know, now everybody's, you know, in on it. And it's a whole other thing now.
We're all part of the problem, though, because, like, the hobby actually did grow. And, like, people like me or you and, like, lots of people that got back into this, I think probably what happened is these big companies were like, oh, this is growing. Like, this is an opportunity. We can do even more with this. We're going to 10X the hobby.
They smell blood. They smell blood for sure.
I didn't realize when everybody said they were going to 10X the hobby, they just meant they were going to jack the prices up by 10 times so their revenue was going to be 10X. Like, I kind of thought it meant there were going to be 10 times the number of collectors, but that ain't seemed to be the way that it's going. It seems like we have hit a plateau. Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't... Does it feel to you like we're getting lots of new collectors entering this hobby? It doesn't feel that way to me.
I don't know, man. If you're on Reddit, everybody's a new collector.
Oh, yeah,
wild.
I guess.
Like, yeah, I got back in the hobby yesterday. Look at this $6,000 card I just found under my mat. But, you know, I think there's still a few people that are kind of getting in on it. I like to think that I'm, you know, current to a certain extent, and I got in. I feel, you know, you and I kind of get in and at similar times, so I feel like there was that wave, you know what I mean? And I'm not sure what these waves are like. I know Fanatics has brought a lot more exposure. Before I collect baseball cards, I used to go on Fanatics website looking for jerseys or hats or what have you. And, you know, you see baseball cards on there and maybe it kind of piques your interest and you see it on the shelves at Walmart. I used to see the boxes like, what the hell is going on? Who's buying this shit? Like, what are we doing over here? And like 2015, 2016, little did I know. But yeah, I don't know, man. There's 300 million people in America, bro. You only need, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know.
A few hundred thousand, a few million to do anything. There's, you know, a bunch of guys watch, you know, people play cornhole on ESPN. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? There's somebody for everything. So I would imagine, you know, as kids continue to grow up, kids are playing ball all the time. That's really strong. So, you know, it will continue to thrive, but I don't see it continuing to just get much more huge than it is. It feels pretty huge to me.
Yeah, I think we're at a pretty, I don't, at least I don't, maybe again, maybe I'm not on Reddit, I'm not on the Facebook groups or any of that anymore. I'm pretty much just on like our Discord. I don't know. And I guess I see some stuff on social media, like Instagram and whatnot, but it feels like we're at a pretty stable place in the hobby now. Like, I don't think we're in a boom and I don't think we're in a bust.
Agree. So I think the gold rush money kind of dried up.
Yeah,
already.
Totally.
Right?
Totally. So hopefully that's where we're at. That's kind of where I mean, I just want to see like stable growth from here. Like, get kids into the hobby, get more people into the hobby, make products attractive and such that there's a chase. And there's, I mean, I think exactly what we're seeing with S1 is actually good. Like, there's, it seems like almost all of these retail products that people are opening, not all of them, but we're seeing lots of different types of hits. And I know like junk parallels, but there's something to be said for getting something cool out of every box or hanger, blaster, et cetera, that you open. So you just got to know what you're getting and not set expectations. Like, I'm getting an Ellie De La Cruz rookie auto numbered to 10, and that's why I'm buying this hobby box, because that's a failing proposition. So I don't know.
Yeah, no doubt. It's you know, it's still rough, man, with some of these hobby prices. I mean, retail is retail, and I live and die with retail 9 times out of 10, because, you know, it's who can drop $200, $300, $400 on a hobby box regularly. So,
yeah.
But some of these hobby boxes are getting nuts, man. And I think Fanatics is like breakers or busts, bro. If you want to open these products, you're going to go through the hands of a breaker.
Yeah.
Because regular dudes are not dropping $500 on a Luminaries hobby box. You know what I mean? It's just nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, let's hit some questions. And then I'm going to try to hit the grading questions. And then I do want to kind of like bring it full circle and talk about, we've kind of talked about it every episode, but maybe a little deeper dive on why we grade and maybe how our feelings have changed over time. But I'm going to start. Pagnazzi's got a question. He says, why can't BGS get its shit together and compete? So, TJ, you grade a ton. I know you at one time sent about 50 cards to SGC. You've sent hundreds of cards to PSA. Neither of us have ever sent a card to BGS. Why is that?
So, I've got two Yadier Molina autos that one of them was a redemption. I think both of them have a pretty solid chance at a pristine 10, and I want to send them so bad. So I went as far as to go to BGS website, start the submission. Surprisingly, it was rather simple, rather easy. But long story short, man, it's going to cost me $60 to send two cards in, and that's before we start talking about shipping. And it was wild. They upcharge you if you want the subgrades. And really the only way to get in is they have a 10 card bulk submission, but even in that instance, you're getting upcharged for the subgrades. I got no idea what their turnaround time is like, but I hear nothing but horror stories, you know, regularly. So, and also, you know, I don't think that there's much of an argument, you know, BGS, if you start talking about 9.5s and 10s, I think you're better than PSA prices in a lot of instances. If you got a card with 3 9.5 subgrades, then yeah, I mean, you're looking right on par with the PSA 10 in a lot of instances. So I think the main is probably just the ease and price of submission. And I think that most people just don't want to deal with what they hear is horrible turnaround times.
Interesting. So I actually disagree with one thing, because I like love buying BGS for my PC, because I've gotten like cards with 4 9.5 subgrades and like some with like a 10 subgrade as well. And generally my target price is like 60 to 65% of PSA comps. And like, I've been super successful. And those cards, really? I feel really confident. Like, I mean, they're in that case and everything. I look at them under a microscope I look at them very closely. And they look great, man. Like, they're, if I do the crossover, I feel like they're going to get PSA 10s. So on big cards, I guess on like smaller cards, if a card's like a $70 or an $80 card on a PSA 10, you're not going to see as much of a difference. But like, when I look at my PC, I have a row of 10 BGS cards. And like, some of them I got really cheap. Like, I got a Manny Machado blue rookie auto BGS 9.5. I got the Tatis Sapphire rookie BGS 9.5. Juan Soto gold rookie card BGS 9.5. Manny Machado first Bowman refractor BGS 9.5. Manny Machado heritage rookie auto BGS 9.5. And like, all of those cards, nowhere close to a PSA 10 price. Like, I'm talking like,
that's
like
wild.
50% sometimes. Like, it's insane. So it lets me get this is why I like BGS. It lets me get a card on the market that I know is in good condition. It's slabbed up, it's protected, and it's cheap. Like, a lot of cases, the BGS 9.5, I've, like, seriously, they are cheap relative for these big cards. Because generally, these people that are buying these big cards, they like want their PSA 10. That's what they want. So,
but with that BGS 10, a black label or a pristine is going to outsell that PSA 10 in terms of price.
Oh yeah,
you know what
I mean?
Yeah,
a pristine 10, 100%, and yeah. A black label.
So I think
big time.
Forget about it, right? Yeah. So I think every grading company kind of has its niche or its place. Like you said, SGC for vintage, right? PSA for, you know, everything apparently. But BGS, I think, you know, the reason why people still do use BGS is they send those really big cards that they think have a chance at those 10s, right? And those are the people that are still sending to BGS, because otherwise, who the hell is grading all this stuff with BGS? Knowing that, you know, with the prices, the way you describe them, I don't own any BGS slabs. And, you know, for the record, I love the fact that they're the only ones that put the subgrades on the label. So I think that, yeah, there's, I wish they would make a move. I agree with you. Pagnozzi is whack, man. Like, we need a viable alternative, somebody who can, you know, really compete with PSA at the top level. So, yeah, I hear you,
bro. BGS used to be the gold standard. Like 20 years ago, were people cracking PSA 10s to send to BGS. So,
Be
careful what you crack. Things can change. I mean, what's it going to take for BGS to catch up? Like, honestly, a major scandal at PSA. Can you imagine that? Like,
that would do it. That would do it. And, or a major turnaround at BGS. And they tried to do it when they, remember, they were like, oh, we're switching up the way we do the subgrades and all that.
But you can't.
Yeah, that's not the recipe.
You can't piss off the small loyal base that you have to get people that are,
fix the pricing, fix the turnaround time, and make submission simple. I don't know, maybe like have an app or something like that. Make it work, bro. But
yeah,
don't tear it down. It still works.
Beckett's a big part of my childhood with the Beckett Price Guide magazine. So like, I would love nothing more for BGS to be the leaders, just to see that Beckett name. I know Dr. James Beckett, he's not there anymore. He's not really affiliated, but still, like, it's a big brand. Like, that to me is, I mean, really, like, it's a top five brand in the hobby to me. Like, it's up there with, up there with.
I used to get Beckett every month. Yeah.
Like, when I.
And you like that because they're doing the grading, but also they're involved in other aspects of the hobby. They're not just here like, hey, give me your money, bro. Give me your cards and get them back out there on the market. Yeah. Like, they're, you know what I mean? This is a part of the hobby, a functional for. Man, as long as I've been around.
Right now, though, I mean, it doesn't really make sense to send cards to Beckett unless it's for your PC because you love Beckett, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, truly, I love the Beckett slabs as well, especially I love the subgrades. I know that's part of the problem, and we'll get to that with the next question. But I guess the other reason to send a Beckett is trying to get that Pristine 10 or the Black Label, because those are going to go at a really, really big premium. So that's cool. Most modern.
I said on the Discord, we should all round up our best two or three cards, do a bulk sub to BGS, try to get some tans.
There you go. I mean, I would be down. I don't know. I feel like I've subbed everything that I want to sub at this point, but we'll see.
Start cracking the body. Let's go.
All right. I got a good question from Most Modern. You kind of touched on it, but he said, do you think the presence of 9.5 and higher than 10 ratings contribute to PSA's dominance? All right, I like the in other words. He says, in other words, do you think that collectors overwhelmingly prefer a simple grading model compared to a Pristine 10 or a Gem Mint 9.5? What do you think?
On some level, yeah, I think so. You know, I do see, which is odd, I've seen like PSA 8.5s and stuff like that, but I don't think I've ever seen a 9.5.
No, I don't think they have 9.5.
But I have seen an 8.5. And, you know, it's weird. So on one level, if I send something to PSA and I'm hoping for that 10 and it comes back a 9, I'm super bummed out. If I send something to SGC, I send it a 10, it comes back a 9.5, I'm not quite as bummed out. And is that 9.5 the same price as that PSA 9? No, not quite, because for some reason you think it's just a little bit better. So, you know, that's kind of the downside to that mentality. But on the other hand, yeah, I think it's far more straightforward and less confusing. You talk about BGS, there's a certain recipe where it's like, well, if I have 3 10 subgrades and 1 9.5 subgrade, it's a Gem Mint Plus. But if I have
not a true gem if it has a 9 on it.
You know, put it on the goddamn label or don't put anything on there at all. Leave me alone. So, you know, I do like that. I think it is a little bit more straightforward. But, you know, with that said, I would bend over backwards for an SGC Pristine, you know what I mean? Or for a BGS Pristine or a Black Label. So, yeah, man, I kind of wish PSA had that, but it's also odd that, you know, they're the most popular and they're the only one that doesn't have that. So I think that says something too.
They've mastered the psychological game, because if they had that, it would devalue the PSA 10s. So they mastered it. The psychological game. Most Modern has a second part of that question. He said something he knows, but he doesn't really care about. But do you think PSA's uniform text on their label helps with popularity? As an example, you can discreetly display lower than gem grades while all other companies drive it home with this huge font on the grade. So like if you have a SGC 8, it just like pops at you like 8 right in your face. I don't know what you think about that, man.
So I'm grabbing a couple of slabs. Hold up.
So I have an old Clyde Drexler Beckett, and I have my SGC, a PSA, and a Beckett. So yeah. There's your Beckett.
Yep.
That 9 is pretty big, bro. Here's your SGC. That 10 is big as shit, my man. Mm-hmm. Look at that 10. And then PSA.
Yeah.
That's a tiny little 10. That's like 12 point font, maybe 10 point font. That PSA, or that SGC rather, is like 36 point font in bold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So maybe. I do think PSA is going to have your cleanest, most professional looking slab. It's almost like laboratory sanitary in a way, right? It looks like it's just labeled for like research or something like that, like for cataloging. The SGC, you got the card numbering on there. PSA, I got this nice barcode over here. So yeah, to me, it's the cleanest, just the most simple looking slab. Yeah. And, you know,
it looks,
yeah, I guess there's something to
it
that.
It looks the same. It looks clean. Cause like, again, I just turn and look at my display as an example, and like PSA, no matter if you get dual grading, you get authentication, you get a PSA 1, a PSA 10, and everything in between, the cards look uniform and clean. Whereas with SGC, you know, you got this big numbered grade. You know, if you get like, if you have an autograph grade that's a 10, you've got two numbers on there.
Some of them don't even have that. And it's like, why doesn't this one have an autograph grade?
And BGS is even worse with that, because if you get a gem, a 9.5 or higher, you have the gold little grading. I don't know what to call it. It's not paper. It's just like a little metal or plastic.
Yeah, the little border.
Yeah, but it's, and if you have a card that doesn't have an autograph grade, you have the Beckett logo on the top left. But if you have a card that has an autograph grade, the description of the card is moved to the left, and on the top right, you have an autograph grade. And here's an even weirder one. It's like, I have a card that is a BGS 9, but the auto grade is a 10, so you have the silver for the card grade next to the gold 10. It's just a lot of noise, and it just makes it, I don't know. Again, I like BGS slabs and I get it, but it's almost too much, you know. It's where less is more. Like PSA has mastered the psychological game. They know what people want in their collection, and they're going to give us that. So
and if you have your auto grade, they just stack it right on top of there, nice and neat. No matter what, they fit all that text in there. And, you know, I do like, you know, the SGC maybe gives you a little bit more on the label. Sometimes a PSA label leaves a little bit to be desired. I saw this one. It was, I forget the player. I think it was Torrey Hunter, like a Jackie Robinson Day variation. And it just said Torrey Hunter standing. And so then they were having a contest on Instagram. People could come up with better like captions. One of them was like Torrey Hunter living, Torrey Hunter with pants. Like, you see what I mean?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm with that. I don't know. It's all like, this hobby's weird, man. There's so many inconsistencies and so many things that don't make sense. It's a psychological thing. And it's like the stock market. It's sentiment. We're ultimately, don't consider this investing. You shouldn't. But this is basically the equivalent of what is investor sentiment. Like, hey, we want a growth company. We don't want a value company that is just issuing dividends and blah, 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 and has nothing exciting going on. You know, I don't know.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm going to see. I'm scrolling through the questions to see if we have any more grading ones. All right. Here's a good one. This is from Pagnozzi too. He says he feels like in 5 years, slabs could look very different. Right now, they look and feel like mass-produced plastics, easily scratched, cheap paper labels, optimized for stacking. He could see some company completely redesigning them with the goal of producing something like high-end art displays. So I think that'd be cool. What do you think about it?
I think you've seen a few people do different variations of kind of that simple plastic stack thing. You know, we all remember HGA, rest in peace, you know, with the different labels and stuff like that. I thought that was awesome, man. I was strongly considering, you know, sending some stuff there. And that was at a point in my collecting hobby, life, if you will, where, you know, I just wasn't sending cards in for grade. It was intimidating to me. You know, and now Tag, they've got, you know, they've kind of switched it all up too. There's no label. It's completely clear. I've got one Tag slab. Still stackable, still plastic, still with a label, although it's just kind of etched into the plastic. So a little different yet completely, you know, still the same. I think at the end of the day, you know, you say, you know, and we all agree this, we're collecting, we're not investing, you know, at the end, we are spending money on this stuff now. So, you know, on some level, you know, by definition, we are investing our money into these, you know, little pieces of cardboard with pictures of men and see-through pants on them, apparently. But, you know, it's going to come down to, does this slab add value to the card? So that's what the company is going to have to establish from the beginning. And, you know, PSA buying SGC is just going to prove this is a tough market to crack now. You got a company out here running 70%+ of the market share. So if you can get in somewhere with that, you could do whatever the hell you want to do. But you have to establish value first.
Is this like the dentist system? Isn't E established value?
Yeah, we're not going to.
No, it's D. I think it's the D. I think it's demonstrate value. All right, we'll stop there on the dentist system. Maybe we need to come up with the dentist system for card grading. I think that's our next thing. So I think my thought on this question is similar to yours, and I think you nailed it when you said, this is a tough market to crack. And in order for that to happen, I think somebody needs to come up with something innovative that just totally turns the hobby on its head or turns it upside down. I don't know what it is, but like, think about like the cell phone market. The iPhone, for example, just completely flipped the script on what a phone should be. And really, to some extent, everybody's trying to imitate it ever since. But ultimately, we're, you know, iPhones and Androids, we're kind of making the same thing in a similar way. It's similar to like PSA and SGC, in my opinion. Until somebody comes up with something that can, like, without a doubt, defeat the iPhone or defeat PSA, or the iPhone or PSA completely implodes upon themselves for something, I don't really see it changing that much. Unfortunately, and I think this acquisition keeps us even further away from it. So, because it means that the second biggest player now doesn't have an incentive to do that. So, I don't know.
And PSA survived a lot, man. They survived a huge backlog. They survived countless people like myself. I sent that 2016 Yachty SSP, came back a PSA 6. It was a damn travesty. I cracked it, sent it back in. For all they knew, it was a completely different card. It came back an 8.
I think you're always going to see that too. Like, especially like if you grade like vintage cards, like imagine like a PSA 5 of a vintage card, like there's a range. Somebody's going to see that as a 3 and somebody's probably going to see it as a 7. So I don't grade vintage, but I know talking to like vintage dealers, it shows like they've talked about like cracking and reslabbing. Cause there's this one guy called JD Cards. At least that's the name of his company. I always pick his brain when he's in town. And boom, that's this weekend, the big San Diego card show at Del Mar Fairgrounds. So I'm hitting that up later today. In
a few Let me know if you see any Yachty while you're over there, bro.
I'll give you a holler. I'm looking
2004.
For 2004. Yeah, I'm not. I just spent a lot of money, so I'm not coming in with a very big budget. So I'm mostly going to be looking, trying to grab a, you know, some low end PC items. So
I'll sell it right over to you, bro.
All right, bro. But yeah, so unfortunately, I don't know. I think we're a ways off from something seriously changing.
Agreed. This just kind of solidifies that. And that was why, you know, just to the layperson, it looks like SGC is gaining ground. You know, you see them doing all this stuff. They're getting more exposure. Their app is really, really cool and all, but I guess not.
Yeah. All right. I think that we've hit all the grading questions, but I do want to like I said, kind of bring it full circle a little bit. I don't want to like beat the crap out of grading for more than like 10 minutes because we do have a few more questions. And I want to respect TJ, the dad of the new baby's time.
Oh, she's knocked out, bro. I think by my count, we got at least 45 more minutes. I got her on a schedule.
Oh, well, my daughter might be on her way home from dance shortly, so we'll see.
But I noticed Philly ran you on a tool time length episode. We're on a tool time.
That's how he rolls. He kind of knew it was going to happen. So let me ask you, why do you grade? And like, when do you grade and when do you not grade? So if you were to break it down to somebody new who wanted to get into grading, what would you tell them if they said, hey, like, when should I grade a card?
Absolutely. So first I would want to find out, like, what are you trying to accomplish, right? Are you trying to put together something to display? Are you trying to put together something to hold for long-term value? Are you trying to put together something that you can get it in your hands and put it on eBay and sell it right away or in 6 months or a year down the line? But generally speaking, you know, for PC stuff, I'm sending things that are rare that I want to make even more rare by having a lower pop count because it's in good condition. Also, just by virtue of the fact that it is graded already versus your card that isn't. Mine is cataloged. We know how many of them there are in this condition. It's establishing the rarity of that particular card. And, you know, where I'm at with the point of my PC is I've collected, as we've talked about, 15, 16, 17, 1800 different Yadier Molina cards. And they're all sitting over here in boxes and binders and slabs and everything else in between there. So I'm taking the rarest of the rare, the finest pieces, and I'm putting those in these slabs to just kind of solidify how dope that card is, in my opinion. Other times I'm grading, if I'm grading to sell, I'm taking cards that are, generally speaking, you could say numbered cards or autographed cards or a combination of the two. The only other time I would grade would be, you know, if I'm grading low value cards. By that, I mean first Bowman paper cards, paper rookie cards, Topps Chrome rookie cards, cards that are worth anywhere from $5 to $20. I'm not grading them unless they're somebody huge. And by huge, I mean Julio Rodriguez, Jackson Holiday, Junior Caminero, Jordan Walker, stuff like that. I wouldn't send Jordan Walker rookies, base rookies to grade. I have numbered Jordan Walker cards that I wouldn't send to grade, but I will send a first Bowman auto of Jordan Walker to grade. I'll send a low numbered auto of Jordan Walker to grade. J-Rod, I'm not sending his base rookies, but I will send his short prints to go get graded. I'll send an autographed J-Rod card to get graded. I'm not sending third year or second year cards of just about anybody if they're base to get graded. So I'm trying to take things that are already valuable and make them more valuable. I think that the myth is you can take something that's not really valuable at all, like a $2 card, get it graded, sell it for $25. Bro, you're wasting your time. Stop doing that. And that's kind of my thing. With vintage, I would grade all of it. And I would grade it all with SGC because there's so many counterfeits and trim cards and stuff like that. I think that pretty much covers it for me. What about you?
Damn, that was a great answer. I thumbs up on just about everything you said. I think the most important thing is, like, I think, again, I'm like, you know, I'm Mr. I don't know what you guys call me, Bobby something, I'm sure a nickname for this, but like, you think about what's your objective. So I think about it like almost like a process flow chart. Like you're mapping out a business process or a decision.
This is Bobby the bookkeeper talking.
So you got your flow chart. I think you have to, is this for you to keep? So there's your first question. If the answer is yes, why do you want to put it in a slab? So like for me, for a while, my answer was all of my cards in my display are graded. I want uniformity. Like, I don't want a bunch of cards in one touches. So I want my stuff graded. Cool. Perfect answer. Now my answer's changed a little bit. Now I'm trying to fill out these card cases that are ungraded cards. So now I'm like, I almost don't want to grade stuff for my PC because if it grades, it's probably not replacing something in the graded case. So you have to answer that question for yourself. If it's for you, there's no right or wrong way. Like, you can do what TJ does, grade everything rare, make it even rarer. It's going to reduce friction when you go to sell it. It's going to identify it to your family or your future kids. Hey, this might be something special, unless you're going to leave them some kind of written plan. Exactly. So that's good. So I think you've pretty beat it up pretty good. Like, if it's for you, do what you want. Don't let anybody tell you the right answer. Me and TJ are different for RPC, and everybody out there is different. So you do you. If you like tag, go for it. You like SGC, go for it. You like PWC. That's where I used to work. If you like PSA, go for it. I think if it's to sell, that's when you'd need to be quantitative and objective about it. So if you're doing it to sell, you have to say, what is the raw price right now? Okay, so you know what your return is if you're to sell it raw. Then you need to go down, if I grade it, what value is it going to add? And you also have to like assign probabilities to grades. Because in most cases, for an ultra-modern card, a PSA 9, you will be able to sell it quicker, which is good, but you will likely, as dumb as it sounds, not sell it for the same price as a raw. So you're generally speaking, or you're going to be even on it. You're going to sell it for the same price, at which point the grading cost was just pure loss for you. There's also the time horizon. When do you want to sell it? If it's October and you're going to sell it at Junior Caminero in spring training, have at it. Go grade. You're not missing anything. But if you're sending a bunch of Junior Caminero right now, when are you going to get those back? What's the opportunity cost? What are you going to lose by not having those in hand? So you've really got to like math it out, essentially. But if for the most part, for me personally, grading, I'm almost exclusively doing to sell now. Like if I get a card from a pack that I want to sell and it looks like a gem 10, I'm like, well, shit. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. Like, I got like an $80 card out of a pack. A few months ago, and it looked perfect. It looked beautiful. It's not a player I like, not a player I care about, but it's something that other people I know will want. So I'm like, hey, I can grade that for $25 or something through a bulk sub with TJ, and I can turn that into, if it's a PSA 10, a $250 card. So that's a nice return. I'd rather do that than sell it for $80. So it just... But you have to like have the probability of what if it comes back a 9, then I've probably wasted my money.
Well, so. Yeah, the inverse of that. So I pulled that Bryce Harper Gold Mirror SSP. You know, I was getting ready to put a bulk sub in the mail. I was like, fuck, I could slip this right in there. I looked at the comps. It's selling for about 400. If it comes back a 10, shit, man, that might be a $1,000 card, bro. That's going to be a super low pop. It's going to be beautiful with that red border. Somebody's going to want that. Realistically, I'll probably end up getting 8, 750 for it, something like that. But if it comes back at 9 and it's 2 months later, it's maybe a $350 card that I just spent all that money trying to grade. So sell it. Sell it quick. I sold it so quick, I got carpal tunnel listing it on eBay so quickly. It was record time.
100%. And I would say in terms of grading to sell, I would only use PSA unless I felt I could get a 10 at BGS. And I wouldn't suggest you dabble in that until you've got a lot of experience grading. And you might want to send some test cards to BGS to like refocus your eye on what BGS looks for. Because they're pretty tough on stuff like centering, like really, really tough.
And this whole thing we haven't really talked about, like eyeballing condition. I mean, you know, it's pretty simple. I mean, you look at your corners, are they sharp? You look at your edges, are they frayed? You know, surface and centering can be a little bit more difficult. There are centering tools you can buy on Amazon. It's basically a clear overlay. You lay it over the top of the card. It's got little lines that'll show you, you know, where your borders match up, what's 50-50, what's 60-40. And then, you know, surface, I've learned, get that card under a high light and just tip it back and forth, tilt it every different possible angle you can and look for dents, scratches. A lot of that kind of stuff you can buff off with a little microfiber or eyeglass cloth. Maybe a couple drops of water or rubbing alcohol will help with some scratches. But other than that, man, just use your eyes. Take some time. Don't just start sending stuff in. $15 a pop adds up.
Yep, 100%. Give it to your wife. I show my wife cards sometimes.
What's wrong with this?
Yeah, figure it out. You are like so much more detailed than me, like, and you don't have a biased opinion. So if there's like a surface dimple in it or like a print, Yeah. Oh, so just do it. Seriously. And my wife enjoys it too. Like we've done submissions together where like, and it's then
the smartest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Like kind of gets her involved in the hobby. Like I think she enjoyed it, or at least she like faked it pretty well. And we got good grades back together. And it was fun to like reveal the grades together. So it was cool.
Yeah, but I'm a jerk, so I'm looking at it from a totally like different lens where it's like, if you need somebody to find out what's wrong with something, give it to your wife.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it, but I'm not going to go there because I like being happily married and I'm not going to mess with my wife.
Shout out to Mrs. F. Baseball over there with the grading eye.
Yeah.
She builds shelves. She pre-grades cards. Bro.
She's good.
You better go get her some. You better Bobby Bouquet, I think, is the appropriate afternoon effect.
I know, right? Oh, man. All right. I think we hit grading pretty good. I'm trying to think. Like, is there anything we missed on the grading front?
Just in case I didn't touch on it on the podcast, I did send that, you know, that PSA 3 Yachty SP over to Tag. They did a free crossover for me. Did I talk about that?
You know what? I did. Did we... Oh, yeah, we did talk about it.
Talked about it first, but, you know, just in case I didn't, it came back a tag three, bro. That card had some crazy creases in it that I never saw.
Oh, there you go. So if you go back and listen to that episode, I think we were like, oh, it's going to be funny if it comes back like a PSA 10, but even funnier is if it comes back a tag three. What if it come back like a tag two? That would have been classic.
If it was even worse than PSA was being nice about it. So, you know, say what you want about PSA. I guess they were right that one time. I have digital scans to justify it. And shout out to Tag for hooking that up. You know, I had that one that jumped from a 6 to 8, they reached out there. Hey, bro, we'll cross that one over for you too if you want to know what the real grade is. And there's no dispute in it, man. They put the scans up. You see what it looks like. It's, you know, it's can't sell it for what you sell a PSA slab for currently, but, you know, it's interesting for sure.
They look slick for the PC. So
it's a cool looking slab. It's cool while we over here pulling out stuff for this non-video podcast, but it's, you know what I mean? It's clear.
Yeah, it looks nice. I think the question with that stuff is it's like, what are you, like in 5 years, are you still going to want your stuff in Tag? Like if it's free, like sure, but like I would be really careful before you send like 30 cards from your PC to Tag because I don't.
Yeah, reach out to those guys that subbed heavy with HGA.
Yeah, not good. All right, cool. Let's hit some more questions.
I think
we hit grading. I think like my overall thing is like, maybe this is another episode, but I'm like, with ultra modern, does it even really matter? Like there's so much value placed on a PSA 10, but like we sit here and talk about it. Like what's the difference between a PSA 8 and a PSA 10?
Not much, apparently. Not much to my eye.
It's not much. Like I can pick it out, but like, with a really detailed review. And I guess you just have to ask yourself, does it matter? Because you can do stuff like, so I have a PSA 7 today that's arriving. Shout out to Alex when he's not like throwing like ninja stars and knives at Yachty cards. he is spotting great deals for me on Reddit. So he found this, it's a second year Fernando Tatis Jr. It's a card. It's an SSP. It's been on my list for a while. You cheapest you can get them is like $150. He spotted a guy selling a PSA 7 for $50 on Reddit. Somebody clearly pissed off about a PSA 7. I looked at the picture. I'm like, hell with that. I'll buy that card. I'll crack that shit out of that slab right when it gets here. Pop it into one of those little snap cases and put it in my display and I'm be super happy because I just saved myself $150 or $100. So that's
not yeah.
I did the same thing with the Juan Soto PSA 8 that I got. I mean, grades aren't everything. So it's what you want to do with your PC. So All right, more questions. Let's see. I'm just gonna scroll down. I'm not even gonna touch this question because this is the same question Jesse asked last episode, and I was kind of a jerk, and then I felt bad because I was like, oh, maybe he didn't listen to episode one. Now I know he's just being a jerk. I'll let TJ respond this time. What is your future game plan for your collections going into 2024, and what products are you completely avoiding this year? This guy, I tell you what.
Jesse, I love Jesse. I don't know, man. So I haven't got a lot of sleep, but is that legit a question from episode one that we already ran through and everything else?
I don't know. We'll wait for him to ask it four more times.
We may have to push that to ep four. Jesse, we'll circle back.
All right, this one's from Alex. What panini products do you think you'll both become obsessed with this year?
That sounds like a shot, if I'm not mistaken. That sounds like a sneak diss on some level, knowing Alex. You know, National Treasures is always fun. You know what I mean? And last year, there was a lot of cool Jordan Walker, Junior Caminero patches and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to potentially snatching up some cheap singles from disappointed break participants and hobby box openers for National Treasures and Immaculate. Those are always really, to me, and this is going to sound like a, but whatever, man, they're really the only Panini products that matter for baseball at this point in time. All the paper cards and everything else is just garbage. At least give me a nasty patch or a bat barrel or something. So yeah, that's my eye.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same camp. I'm sure there are people that love some of those cards. Like if you grew up and you were a Donruss guy, I'm sure that still holds a special place in your heart. But like at this point, I know we talk trash on Monopolies, but like, I mean, let's just have, can Topps buy the Donruss brand so that we can get some like Donruss cards with team logos on it? I'd be down for that.
Quick edit. I do like Optic. Optic is cool. Yeah, I'll give it up for Optic.
Some of the inserts are really cool. Like I've picked a couple up, like just cheap, like dollar singles, and they're super cool. But yeah,
I bought an Optic hobby box at a weird off brand store in the mall. And it turned out being a hot box. One of those, like where you have like numbered cards and autos in every pack is the most fun I've ever had opening a box of cards.
Dude. So speaking of that, I saw somebody, I think it was a case. There was like a break that somebody opened a case of Topps Chrome Sapphire. I don't know.
With all the autos in it, had like 80 autos or something.
Every pack had an auto in the whole case. It was insane. Oh my God.
I don't even know, man. I gotta start breaking, I guess.
Can you imagine being in that break and like getting skunked and not getting an auto? How pissed you would be.
Can you imagine being in that break and hitting like 12 grand worth of cards just off top from
Sapphire? Well, yeah, there was like somebody that I think hit four or five Corbin Carroll rookie autos. It's like, oh my
God. You better have armed security. Good lore.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. So that was cool. All right, SSK, his response to Alex's question, does this mean we will see Bobby pajama cards come back? Maybe.
Yeah.
So the pajama cards are the Panini cards that are just blank, you know, especially the old cards. Like you get a nice Ty Cobb with nothing, no logo or anything. Like that's a pajama card.
Yeah. And then it's like the relic is like, really, bro, you guys went back to 1933 and picked up these piece of these pants and you expect me to believe you cut them up? Like, would you go to Cooperstown? What the hell are we doing over here?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
You still got Ty Cobb pants laying around? What are we talking about?
Yeah. All right. So I think we got a question from Philly that relates to some of the news we got yesterday on Noelvi Marte, the Cincinnati Reds top prospect. Tested positive for something. I don't know. Maybe he got ringworm or something. He's suspended for 80 games now. So his question, I guess he's got three questions, just all the same post. So I'll say, is Fernando Tatis Jr. the new norm when it comes to PED suspensions and still having hobby love after the fact, or is he more of the exception? Or what to do if you have no Noelvi Marte cards? So I don't even think Tatis, do you think he still gets hobby love? Because I don't feel like he does. I feel
so
like
he was a hobby darling before the PED.
Right. But now I don't think I feel like I get Tatis cards for about the same price as Manny cards and people hate Manny. So
yeah, I'm not really keyed into the Tatis market. I guess you probably be better suited to answer that, you know, as somebody who shops for that kind of stuff. But I would imagine that the vast majority of his rookie stuff is still available for significantly cheaper than it was in 2021 or, you know.
I'll give you a few prices that are like jaw-dropping compared to what they were at the peak. So Fernando Tatis Gold Finest Rookie Auto, numbered to 50. BGS, oh, yeah. BGS 9. Okay. Auto 10. How much do you think?
Now or then?
Now. I don't know how much it was then, other than too much for me.
I don't know. Couple 300 bucks?
It's like 220.
Which yeah, is there like you go.
For a rookie auto numbered to 50. So, I mean,
that wasn't a $1,500 car. Well, maybe yeah. In a 9, it was probably, you know,
yeah,
3X that at least.
But that's like, why does it, like, the grade shouldn't matter that much for a card that rare, in my opinion. But the other thing is like the Sapphire Tatis Jr. So I got a BGS 9.5, quote unquote, true gem. All the subgrades are a 9.5 or higher. I got that card for, I think, $300. Like, that was a $2,000 card during the pandemic. So, I mean, it's insane. And that I just got, I talked about last episode from Topps Chrome Update, a Gold Wave Auto numbered to 50. I got it for $100. It's like,
wow.
That's cheap. Like, it's not a rookie, but like, it's cheap.
It's damn near like pennies on the dollar. So I would imagine his stuff that's coming out now is probably going to be, you know, similar to that. And, you know, to that, he's going to have a couple of dominant seasons off the juice. You know what I'm saying? Just to be able to kind of solidify that. Because he was a stud. He was a hobby darling before that. He was, you know, Ohtani level, him and, you know, Vlad Jr. at the time, who's also fallen off, but for different reasons, were, you know, beloved in the hobby. You know, I will say, you know, preface, you know, all of that. I'm a McGuire fan, bro. It is a little different, you know what I mean, nowadays, because, you know, they're testing for it. To Philly's question about Marte, I would argue that because Tatis established himself, you know, as such a, you know, hobby darling prior to the juice, he's probably got a much better chance of maintaining the upside than Marte does, because, bro, if you're doing that to get through the minors, then they're going to question everything. You know what I mean? Yeah. And there's really no saying whether or not Tatis was, but it just looks different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I think the thing with Tatis, too, I feel like he's not getting love for a guy that it feels like he's been around for a long time. He just turned 25, and he's gotten a career war of 18, and he's projected to have a near 6 war season. Like, all things equal, like, that's a guy who should have, and he's an exciting player.
Indeed.
He won, like, the Platinum Glove last year, like, in year one in a new position. He's entertaining out there in the outfield. I think he just missed almost 2 full years of baseball, too. I mean, some of it by his doing with the suspension, some with an injury. So, I mean, he could have a monster year, but his prices aren't anywhere near what they would be if he hadn't got caught juicing. So I don't know
if you're holding Marte, don't sell it now.
Yeah, I don't think sell it now and
see what happens, because right now is the worst time to sell.
Yeah, but I think long term it's a RIP to the Noelvi Marte market. So
it's talk about a black eye, you know what I mean? Forget about it.
All right, let's hit a couple more of Philly has a question. I think we should hit this one next episode as part of our season preview, so it's, you know, talking about veterans that will be entering the Hall of Fame conversation this year. So let's hold that one for next episode. I think that goes well with the season preview.
Agreed.
This is a good one. This is actually grading related. If you send a card that you have had for multiple years or decades and it doesn't get a high grade, do you even care? If so, would you look to upgrade or just crack it and one touch it?
If it's a card that's permanent PC, I care a little bit, but not much, depending on the grade. So that, the SSP is a good example. I'm never selling that card. When it was a 6, I was mad. Now that it's an 8, I'm okay with that.
What about your 3?
I'm going to leave it in the tag 3 just for the novelty of it. But there's a part of me that's like, God damn, it's my only one that's not in a PSA slab. All my other Yachty SPs are slabs. So it's, you know what I mean? It bothers me. So I will look to upgrade that. If it's for sale, then yeah, man, I'm bummed big time if it comes back low.
I agree. All right, here's one from Alex, and it's not a smart ass question either. How about that? But it is. Hey. It's long winded. If you guys haven't seen with Upper Deck, the Series 2 has just jumped to $300 a box from the original $120 just for the chance of pulling a Connor Bedard. his rookie cards are selling for at least $800 a piece. I know that certain baseball products will increase in price after release for certain rookies. Do you guys ever see something like this happening with Topps, where the hype is so much that prices double before the actual release?
I guess my only question would be, when he says that price, is he talking about the price through the distributor? You know, I don't know where you buy Upper Deck, or does he mean like the LCS? Because I routinely see that with baseball, where something will come out. You remember the 2022 update jumbos?
Yeah.
Right. And they were supposed to be juiced. And then, you know, they're like pre-sale 250, and then they dropped and they're 260. And then you went in the next day and they're like, yeah, man, that's 375, my man. Like, what the hell are we doing in here?
Yeah. It reminds me of the pre-orders for Bowman too, like Bowman draft, especially. Maybe not to the multiple in terms of percentage increase, because that's like a 250% increase in price or
that's
something.
Wild.
So, or 150%, not 250, but it's crazy. So I think we have seen jumps like that in the past. Like the other one that I'm thinking about is a Topps 2022 Topps Chrome, which ended up being the worst product ever. The Where's the Fucking J-Rods.
My favorite Bobby baseball core of all time.
Those, if I recall right, like regular hobby boxes were, I think, going for like $450 or $499 like 2 or 3 weeks before release. And
yikes.
Like it was crazy. And you can get those things for like under $200 now, but it was
with the free silver pack.
Yeah. It was the hype of the guys that were in there, and assuming that they were in there. And then I think it died down a little bit when people saw they don't have base cards and they don't have base autos. And it died down even more when it was like, oh yeah. And the SP is not there.
at all.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think we'll definitely see it. It's all hype, right? I'm sure it's probably happening in the NBA right now with Wembanyama. It'll probably happen in baseball when we get some mega prospect like Topps update this year. What if they make Caminero? What if Caminero breaks out, has a huge season, and they hold him out until update, and you get Jackson Holliday an update, something like that? I don't think that's going to happen, but that's like the example of where you could see product going for really expensive.
I think we'll always see dynamic pricing on the secondary market, you know, from even just being the LCS. And for a lot of people, the LCS is the primary market, but it's not. You know what I mean? It's, you know, from Topps. And I know Panini, you know, plays around with that a lot with their Dutch auctions. And sometimes, you know, they'll sell an LCS a case at one price. And then, you know, when it comes time for the re-up, then they'll, you know, they'll 1X, 2X, 3X the price on them or something like that. I think dynamic pricing will always be a thing, just driven by the hype. They're all in it, just trying to rub two pennies together like everybody else.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I would add, it's like, if you see a product like that and you see, so like right now with S1, the odds are good in like hangers, as an example. If you get one of these where, the jumbo boxes are loaded, like you get 10 parallels out of a jumbo box, like, and you get a good class, that's where you'd really see it. So, I mean, Topps could make it happen if they want to. So the thing kind of like that is a headwind to it, like holding it back a little bit, is they're printing this stuff so much these days. And I don't know enough about the hockey market to know, like, it to me, it feels smaller and more niche. But maybe now that you have this generational guy in Connor Bedard, like maybe it's just demand. Like you've got people that don't usually rip hockey are now chasing it. So
that's, I always see hockey on a shelf.
Yeah. I mean, Upper Deck is headquartered like 15 minutes from my house. So like, I feel like it is everywhere in San Diego, like everywhere. And it's like, often it's the only thing there. So
we all see that shelf where the only thing left is Upper Deck hockey tins and Pokemon.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. I think we maybe have one or two more questions. Oh, this is a good one. SSK.
In 2023, some established sets like Gypsy Queen Gallery, Gold Label, Fire, and Opening Day did not get a release. What impact did this have on the hobby, if any? Do you miss any of this? Any other things you think will get the axe? What do you think should get the axe? Well, maybe I'll just start. What's the impact on the hobby to you of that?
I think it's fewer options, but more availability of them, right? So, you know, it's just, it's going to kind of really set a market that I'm sure from a business standpoint makes more sense. But from a collector standpoint, it's a little less confusing because it's a little less cluttered. But at the same time, it's also, you know, you lose some sets that some people really enjoyed. I think the argument for opening day, it's fine, man. I think we're okay without opening day. I think Big League is a suitable replacement for that. You know, Topps Fire, similarly, some of those other ones as well. I really just miss Gypsy Queen, bro. Yeah. I think that's really what I'm trying to get to. It was a beautiful set, and the only knock for me on Gypsy Queen was that because it was released so early in the year, the rookie checklist was always weak because you only had the S1 rookie checklist in it. So it really never got a lot of love, probably for that, you know, that reason. But yeah, man, I just miss GQ.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I, you know, I was thinking about this and I was like sometimes this happens like at breweries local. So we have a lot of breweries in San Diego and sometimes they'll drop a beer that I really like, or they'll have seasonal releases. But like there's one like Stone Brewing, which is pretty much everywhere. They make this green tea IPA. It sounds weird, but it's so freaking good. They made it back in like 2015 and they like re-released it like 2 years ago. I think they should do something like that with like Gypsy Queen. Like just give us a random Gypsy Queen drop like in like a few years and like rotate around, give some random drops of things. Like give us a Topps Fire one random year. Like it's fine. Like we got so much crap in the hobby. It just like kind of throws a bone to like some of us that really like some of those sets, like Gold Label.
And yet somehow Bowman Platinum continues to be printed.
So is that the one you would give the axe? Because he's asking,
I would give the shotgun to.
So any that you think will get the axe, and what do you think should get the axe?
They probably won't trim it much more than they did. I think they came in and did a lot in one big fell swoop.
Yeah.
You know, it certainly appeared. And I think that they've got little niches cut out for each one of these other products. I think there's an argument to get rid of tier one entirely. You know, it could kind of be absolved into maybe Museum or Triple Threads or, you know, one of those other ones.
Killed though. But, Triple Threads got killed. You notice that? It never came out. There was no announcement that it went away, but we never got 2023 Triple Threads.
Yeah, you know, I didn't love Triple Threads, bro.
I like it.
The little jumbled word salad that was at the bottom of every one where you could read it the right way, but you could also read it where it was like Aramaic or something like that.
I think it just had like a special place to me because I don't know. It was like when I was first really, really getting into the hobby, it was like, it was one of the premium products that was releasing when I was starting to figure stuff out. And like the time of year, it always releases around the holidays, like good vibes. But yeah, it just never came out. So I guess it's dead. RIP.
That's wild. I mean, it was cool for what it was, but yeah, not my favorite set. I'd rather just have a big, nasty patch instead of weird patches hidden behind indecipherable
words. Like, who knows what some of them even mean.
And some of the phrases were just horrific, bro. Exactly. It was laughable at best.
Yeah. Well, did you see the Ronda Rousey one?
No, I mean, I think I have, but please, please do tell.
Just look it up for yourself.
Go ahead on with the next question.
It's hilarious. I'm just going to say that it says best in her class. And some of the letters are in one color that makes it jump out. So just think about best in her class. Think about it. What's that say?
There's a, there's a BGS 8.5, but they want 12,499 or best offer.
Yeah. I mean, it
is numbered out of three. So there's only two.
It's others. Expensive to get best in her class. That's all I'm going to say, bro.
What's the next question, Bobby?
You look tired. You look tired, man. I'm sorry. There's some talk about Stadium Club Chrome. RIP. I'm glad that one's gone. I got a question.
It was so unnecessary.
I got a question from a dude named Matt on Instagram. He's a Canada guy who's very heartbroken that it seems Shohei ripped the jersey off and displayed his Dodgers jersey underneath at the last possible moment. But
like mid-flight.
Yeah. He says he collected cards as a 10 to 12 year old, made a solid base, but he's in his 30s now, getting back into it with his kids. And he said, question for us, any value in buying Topps Pro Debut? He said he's a small-time collector with a budget of about $100 a month towards cards. So what advice would you give him? He's getting back in, considering Topps Pro Debut, about $100 a month budget.
Topps Pro Debut, there's two different ways you can go with your budget. You can do the buy singles thing. I know everybody says that all the time. Obviously, that's going to be the best way to get the cards that you want. Considering the fact that you want to open packs and, get potential hits and stuff like that, I love Topps Pro Debut. You grab yourself a hobby box. There's two varieties of those. There's a three auto variety and then the jumbo that's got five. Whichever one of those two you choose, I'm going to go ahead and say you're going to get anywhere from 3 to 7 numbered parallels of some sort. And then you'll get either your three autos or your five autos. They're all going to be prospects. So understand that if you're going to buy this, these aren't guys that are going to be on major league rosters. Generally speaking, these are guys that are at some phase of their minor league career. So it's the equivalent to buying Bowman. So there's some fun in that. You get some young up and coming rookies, some guys that, haven't made their debuts yet. Maybe you get a hot prospect. There is the possibility for pulling some big high dollar cards out of there if you get the right guy. For example, this year you get Jackson Holliday. Maybe you pull his autograph. That could be worth some money if that's, what you're looking to do. It's fun to get a big card when you open a pack. But generally speaking, it's kind of like Bowman Jr., right? So the value is always going to be secondary to the Bowman market. So I think it's, just say all that because I'm not sure exactly where you're at with that or what your desired return is from, opening those boxes. But I'll tell you one thing, man. Pro Debut is a hell of a fun rip. It is so much fun. And if you're doing it with your kids, they're going to have a blast.
Yeah, I agree. Lots of like parallels, lots of autographs. And, I've opened, I think it was 2022. I opened two hobby boxes, got some really cool hits. Like I got Jackson Merrill auto, Colson Montgomery, a couple other people. Marco Luciano. I opened one last year. My best hit was Spencer Jones gold numbered to 50. At the time I was like, cool. Like, $30, $40, $50 card, maybe. I'll keep this. Maybe he'll pop off with the Yankees. That day that he, I don't know, maybe he hit multiple homers or he went 3 for 3 or something. I listed up that card that sold within 2 hours for $125. I was like, bam. Cool.
I cost you two boxes.
Right yeah, there. Like, cool. I'll take that. Like, that card wasn't special to me. Like, would I have liked to have left it in my display? Yeah, but like, I turned around and bought some other cool shit with it. So I think just like when in doubt, if you're going to open boxes, especially if you haven't done it before, it does kind of spoil the fun a little bit, but try to go on YouTube and maybe watch like a break or two, like to just see like what you're going to get out of those boxes and think about the worst case scenario. Like what if you don't know any of the guys that are parallels and autos, like how are you going to feel? And if you're like, it's at a price point where I'm still having fun, then I'd say go for it. I don't know though. How long has Pro Debut been around? Do we know? Like,
I've been buying it since and seeing it around since I want to say 2020.
That's at minimum. That's about what I would say. Cause I don't think we really have like an established market for like, what is a 2011 Bryce Harper pro debut auto go for? I don't think we really know.
Yeah, I'd be curious. But I mean, with all that, I'm holding some Junior Caminero pro debut autos in PSA slabs. I got a green out of 99, a red out of 10, a gold out of 50. These are all sending PSA slabs, and I plan on getting big returns on all of those. That green is listed on my eBay right now for $399 or best offer. Go take a look.
Hell yeah. So I think, yeah, I think it's all what you want to do. I wouldn't be looking at it from I'm going to make money on it. But it's like a relatively cheap rip with lots of hits, with lots of potential to get autographs and cool stuff of guys that if you were to try to buy their Bowman cards, it's just way more expensive and it's tough to obtain. So I think it's a good entry point, especially if you're like looking to get prospect cards, but you're like, I'm not ready to pay Bowman prices in terms of ripping or buying singles. I think it's a great product to look into. So
hard agree.
Cool. All right, man, we hit an hour and 45 minutes. So I think I'm about tapped. Anything else you want to hit on this grading episode, or you're welcome back into the podcasting world after a month off?
Nah, shout out to you and Philly for holding it down. Appreciate it. It was a great episode to listen to. Thanks everybody for your kind words and congratulations and gifts. I got, you know, Jesse sent me diapers and all kinds of stuff.
So he's not just sending asshole comments to the mailbag. What a guy.
A bunch of guys in the sub sent me a bunch of stuff, man. Appreciate all you guys. Shout out to the Discord and everybody on Reddit with all your kind words and et cetera, et cetera. Appreciate you again, man. It's great to be back. And yeah, I think we'll do this again in a couple of weeks.
Oh yeah.
I haven't heard a baby scream one time.
This is next episode is going to be the MLB preview. We'll have two whole games in the books at that point, the Dodgers and Dodgers and Padres Korea series. So
we'll have to do a thing where we like set a little timer and do every team in like 25 seconds or less. Ooh. Or something. You know what I mean? And just kind of like,
I like that.
Just some quick hits on everybody.
I like that. I can work with that. I think we should do it. And then we can
There you go. There's the next episode, guys. Right. You heard it here first.
Boom. Thanks. The creative mind. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Yeah. Shout out to everybody. TJ, welcome back. Philly, thanks for holding it down. Ephus Discord, you guys are great. I appreciate y'all. Love this community. Every now and then, one of you sends me some kind words about, you know, how you feel about the community. And I can just tell you that for me, like any enjoyment you're having, I can assure you I'm having just as much, probably more. So I appreciate all you guys. Thanks for being a part of the community. All right.
Big Bobby. Appreciate y'all.
Shout out, guys. See you later. Bye.